Welcome to Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. I'm Damon Azali, and I'm here with my co-host Manuel Criollo, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Today we're going to be talking about one of the biggest problems facing us today, and that's global warming. Organizations and governments are coming together for the UN Climate Conference in Montreal, Canada this week, and groups are trying to push the United States to ratify the Kyoto Accords that call for a 5% reduction in the amount of greenhouse emissions that countries put out. Today, in that light, we're going to be talking to Winona LaDuke from Honor the Earth to talk to us about clean energy and what it will take to get us to move away from petrochemical fuel sources. Secondly, Sunita Narain from the Center of Science and Environment in India will talk to us about the global implications of the Kyoto Accords and the geopolitical positioning of its biggest polluters, namely the United States. And to round out the show, we'll have Tom Goldtooth from the Indigenous Environmental Network to talk about the tactical plan for the UN meetings in Montreal. So first on the line, we have Winona LaDuke. Welcome to the show, Winona.
Well, thanks.
Well, Winona, this is Manuel Criollo, and I wanted to start off, you know, for you to give, you know, at least the listeners, you know, I think the model of what, you know, of many people in our generation came out where, you know, we started off as struggling for struggling for our people, and then eventually that struggle always is so tied both to land, but more importantly to the environment and the health of our peoples. Can you give us at least a little background for people? I know many people know of your history, but I think some of that transitionary position between, you know, sort of land, people, and the environment.
Sure. You know, I mean, that's the reality. Indigenous people in North America or, you know, Native people in reservations have about 4% of our original land base. So that's these little slivers that we have left. And on that, you know, we find ourselves in a situation where we have two-thirds of all uranium, one-third of all Western low-sulfur coal, a lion's share of oil, natural gas, immense water resources. And, you know, you're faced with a country, the United States, being the largest energy market in the world and pretty much a predator, you know, the largest consumer of resources in the world. And indigenous lands are, you know, have been for many years a source of wealth for the United States and for certainly for the foundation of most major energy corporations, whether Exxon or, you know, Mobil or Peabody Coal. All those guys started on Indian land.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is continuing today. And I think particularly as we look at these issues of global climate change, you know, America has a chance to do the right thing, and a lot of the right thing has to do with Indian people.
Well, you know, I know later on, as you heard in the intro, we're going to have Sunita Narain and Tom Goldtooth to talk to us about this upcoming, you know, gathering that's happening in Canada this week. You know, why don't you give us at least a picture of what the material cost is to Indigenous people in terms of our own addiction to petroleum-based energy? What's the impact of extraction and exploitation inside the native lands?
Well, you know, start with something like uranium. You know, 70% of the world's uranium supplies are in indigenous territory, whether Australia or Canada. The lion's share is up there. Huge radiation contamination throughout our communities. And then, you know, subsequently nuclear power and the contamination that is a result of that. And, you know, personally, I spent a good portion of the early 80s fighting nuclear power plants. I was, you know, all over Southern California fighting Southern California Edison and, you know, Arizona and, you know, all these places. And here, one of the things that, you know, even some environmentalists and certainly the Bush administration is saying is that the answer to global climate change is nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something I got to ask is, if that's the answer, what was the damn question? You know, I mean, that's not an answer. You know, let's just irradiate everybody. You know, the impact of coal. I, you know, when I heard that I had an opportunity to talk to folks down in L.A., I mean, L.A. is pretty much it. You guys are like the giant sucking sound. You know, I hear it. I could hear it up here in Minnesota, the sucking sound of L.A., you know, which is, you know, you got to pretty much, well, I don't know, between Phoenix and L.A. and Las Vegas winning the award for least sustainable city. I'm not sure. You know, it's a tough one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, water you don't have. You know, you got, you know, places you're irrigating or, you know, whatever, all your lawns and your swimming pools and, you know, the blow dryers. And then, you know, the reality is someplace like Navajo. And Navajo Nation, you know, over there just a little bit, you know, east of Utes, over there in Arizona, New Mexico area, that place there, you know, has 5 coal fire power plants and 4 coal strip mines. You know, new plants proposed. Today, 37% of all Navajo households still don't have electricity. But all that power is going to Albuquerque, Phoenix, Las Vegas, and L.A. A chunk of it is going to L.A. What's the impact? It's immense. You know, you got something like the Black Mesa Strip Mine, which is like cutting this gaping hole in the driest part of the country. You know, something that's gonna be a million years before it can be recovered. And then you have this Mojave Generating Station owned by Southern California Edison. They're looking possibly at closure of that thing. They should put the nail in the damn coffin on that one. You know, that's over there by Las Vegas. You got coal that you're getting out of, you know, Black Mesa, Peabody coal, and then they slurry it, which is kind of like oatmeal. You take water that they shouldn't be touching, you know, 1 billion gallons a year of water. They take from an aquifer underneath Navajo to an aquifer, and then they slurry it and make this, like, toxic soup, and it gets over there to Nevada, and it evaporates on the skyline, you know, and 1 billion gallons a year after 201.3 billion gallons, actually. But, you know, that is like you're sucking everything dry, you know? And I look at that, and that's like a microcosm. You get that. You get Anwar, or, you know, or Gwich'in territory. You got between Crows and Navajos, you know, to let you know kind of how significant this, you know, is here in Montreal. Between Crow and Navajo, they say that between those two nations, that's 1/9 of world coal reserves is in Indian territory.
Hmm.
And, you know, kind of our thinking on this is, why don't we just leave it in the ground? You know?
So you guys are listening to Winona LaDuc, and this is Damon Azali and Manuel Criollo on Voices from the Front Lines. And I think Manuel and I, you know, telepathically communicating right here are really happy that we're actually in Los Angeles because it's a good place to organize for progressive climate change. And I guess I just want to just kind of put an event out that we're doing coming up on Saturday, December 3rd at 10 a.m. The Bus Riders Union and the Labor Community Strategy Center is actually trying to get between 50 and 75 folks to actually go out on the buses and talk to folks about climate change. And then we're also going to be having cell phones, so we're going to actually be handing the cell phones to bus riders so that they can actually call the president and demand that the U.S. signs the Kyoto Protocol. So I guess with that...
Oh, you guys are cool. I like this.
Well, no, the Dukes said we're cool, man.
After we get off the phone here, you guys make sure you email me and I can figure out, because we need some help in L.A.
Okay, that sounds good.
You know, as a native person, I used to call L.A. The organizers, or, you know, I don't mean to diss you guys, but we call it the Indian Black Hole. You know, these native people would go out to L.A. and organize, and they would never be seen again. It was just like, you know, come back, you know. Oh, you don't even know how to hear the stories when they finally show up, if they ever do. It's crazy. So I'm glad you're organizing there. We could really use some help.
Yeah, so folks should you can show up on the corner of Wilshire and Western at 10 a.m. this Saturday. You can also call 213-387-2800 for more information. I guess what I want to kind of take the conversation is, a lot of times there's the alternative to kind of coal and oil fuel sources, and then there's also the kind of renewable sources. So a lot of times if we even look at, like, compressed natural gas, like, we actually fought really hard to get compressed natural gas buses in Los Angeles opposed to diesel. But we also have found out the extraction, a lot of the stuff you were talking about, the extraction of compressed natural gas from the land actually does an incredible amount of damage. And
yeah.
I know...
You know what my thinking is on this, guys? I think that our motto is that we should combust in our own era. You know what I'm saying? We're like combusting the Jurassic era right now. Let's move into this one, at least. You know, so biodiesel would be your answer. You know what I'm saying? ethanol is transitional. I have an ethanol vehicle. You know, it's not, you know, it's better than what we got, right? You got alternative fuels is what I'm saying. And, of course, the hybrids. You know, the most patriotic thing, if that dang George Bush was really patriotic, what he would have said on January 1st in his State of the Union was, you know, Americans should get 300 to 500 miles per gallon of gas. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to put, you know, $12 billion into transforming the energy economy of the United States. We're going to have fuel efficiency standards. We're going to go out there and have hybrid vehicles, and we're going to mandate E85, you know, ethanol E85 across the country. And in that process, you know, we're going to turn the whole federal fleet into E85. In that process, we're going to, you know, ensure that people get, you know, miles per gallon. And, you know, that would have been rocking. I mean, you know, but you and I know, you guys, that here we are. It's 2005, and world petroleum production just peaked. We just consumed half of the world's oil resources. You know, give ourselves a hand. We did it the past 50, 60 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of all downhill from now.
Well, it's
like in a crack at the bottom of the sea in China. Some tar sands out in Alberta where you got to squeeze oil out of sand. You know, I had to break it to the teenagers in my house. I said, I'm really sorry, you guys, but I was part of consuming half of the world's oil reserves. You guys better learn something from the Amish.
Well, let's talk about now, I mean, you know, in your work with Honor the Earth, you have been pushing for this concept of energy justice. What are the things that your organization is pushing for at this moment?
Oh, we got some really great ideas. You know, even on my own reservation, it turns out Indian reservations, go figure how this happened, Indian reservations are the windiest place in the country. I don't know how that happened, but we totally are windy. So you get some place like Pine Ridge Reservation, South Dakota, 4,000 times more wind than they could use. Three affiliated tribes, 17,000 times more wind than those guys could use. So tribes are looking, putting up wind turbines. My own reservation here, total miracle. We just got on that dang energy bill appropriation, we got appropriated $1 million for a wind turbine. We're going to put a big wind turbine up here.
Mm-hmm.
So Indian tribes in this country have the potential to produce half of present U.S. installed electrical capacity, right? Half. 300 gigawatts, at least, of wind potential. You just got to unclog the damn power lines from coal. And these guys at Southern California Edison, back to your area, just mm-hmm. as an example. These guys could be about supporting Navajo Nation's just, you know, work on moving into renewable energies. These guys are looking at a $170 million wind project. You know, Southern California Edison should take their money that they're going to get from closing down Mojave, the $40 million a year that they're going to get over there from not having that carbon hit the atmosphere, and do the right thing for Navajo. That's what I mean, is that's energy justice. You need the power, you got the giant sucking sound. Instead of getting it from coal, why don't you get it from wind and solar?
So, Winona, how do we actually move from petrochemical energy to wind and solar power?
Well, first of all, you know, you got most of the power lines are already intact, and this Mojave Generating Station is closing down. You got a shot right here. Southern California Edison could absolutely invest in renewable energy at Navajo. They could enter in power purchase agreements with Indian tribes and use the same damn power lines that are blown full of coal and instead, you know, have it full of wind. You know, that's the example of what you could do. You know, but you know, I have to be really honest. It's like go across the country and you could do exactly the same thing, but still, we got to just look at what we're doing. I mean, the reality is that our present coal-fired power plants are so darn inefficient that the amount of power we waste in, like, excess thermal heating and just blow into the atmosphere is the equivalent of the amount of energy used by the second largest industrial economy in the world. That would be Japan. You know, so what I'm saying is get efficient, get smart, go alternative. Mm-hmm. You know, don't just go alternative with the same bad production systems.
And what's been the roadblock? I mean, what's been the primary roadblock? I'm assuming the reason why Southern California Edison wouldn't want to move forward with something like that is because they wouldn't be the ones that are producing the energy themselves, right?
Well, you know, that could be part of it. They could probably enter into some joint partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, some of these areas up here, I mean, Florida Power and Light, is the largest owner of wind turbines in the country right now. They're not like, you know, hippies. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They're Florida Power and Light. You know, get smart over there. Didn't you learn anything from Enron? I mean, you know, there's a few things they could do. Southern California Edison certainly has the potential, you know, to do that. But the other side of it is that, you know, I really feel like it's a justice issue, you know, on some level. And I don't, you know, I mean, I feel like as a Native person, I don't want charity. I want justice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pay for this transition. You know, buy power. You know, don't, I mean, that's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's been, at least in your approach to the different Native nations, what has been the, how much buy-in is there in the concept of renewable energy and the concept of wind energy inside the Native lands?
There's a lot of interest in it. But, and you know, the funny thing is, it's not the funny thing, it's kind of tragic but true. You know, you guys probably been around a while. You know, very little funding goes to Native grassroots organizations in this country, right? And the funding over the past 20 years has funded, like, environmental justice work, right? Nobody wanted to fund the alternative. That's like what geeky white guys do. You know what I mean? In Madison and in Berkeley. I mean, not to diss geeky white guys, right?
Right.
So now here we are. You got, you know, our reservation, we got massive wind potential. These other Indians got massive wind potential. We could organize incredibly, but we don't have the technical capacity to move into the renewable economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's our roadblock now, is that lack in that technical capacity. So that's a lot of what we're working on.
But is it true, Winona, that we could say that there is also a certain portion of Native leadership that is also well invested in the kind of system of petrochemical sort of energy source that we have at this moment?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, just getting real. I mean, Navajo has $100 million a year in basically fossil fuel revenues. You know, who hooked that up? You know, that'd be Standard Oil. They created the Navajo Tribal Council so they could get leases. You know, so Navajo, you know, you can't just say pull. I mean, what Southern California Edison has done is, I think it's 250 Navajo miners just got layoff notices, you know, out of the Southern California Edison closure. Now, you know, there was not a transition plan there, you know. So that's the thing is that there has to be a plan because, you know, when we're talking about, you know, moving from this economy that we got, we're talking about families that have no source of income. Besides this, you know, these aren't like, you know, Ken Lay and those guys can just go, you know, skate.
So we are talking to Winona LaDuke, and this is Manuel Criollo, and Damon I, this is because it's Damon Azali and Manuel Criollo on Voices from the Frontlines. And Winona, before we go to the next guest, I wanted to see if we can get your contact information for people who want to get more information on.
Yeah, Honor the Earth is where you can find us. I think it's honortheearth.com. Tom, I'm going to get in trouble on that one.
Just look up I have it right. It's www.honorearth.org.
There you go. Thank you.
So thank you so much for joining us, and we will be in touch.
Yeah, would you guys? Because, you know, I don't want to go to the black hole unless there's a guy.
Yeah, we'll put out a beacon of light for all the wonderful indigenous organizers to come through.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
All right, so
have
we'll be.
Day.
Thank
all
you.
Right.
We'll be right back with Sunita Narain.